Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Grant and Rohan. I'm Grant. That's Rohan. It's your last YouTube 49ers show of the work week before you go on your weekend. We know you need more 49ers discussion to get you there. So that's why I got Rohan here. How you doing, Rohan?
I'm doing good, man. I mean, like you said, we can never have enough 49ers discussion. Best way to end out the week. Just hammer out a show and glad to be here with you.
Yeah. So we're going to talk draft. We're going to talk the Bills and the Niners and Aaron Banks and extensions, but we got to check in on Brandon Ayuk because he's like the news.
He's the hot commodity. Yeah.
He's where things could happen. And Mike Florio today said he expects, or he wouldn't be surprised if the 49ers make Brandon Ayuk play out his fifth year option. Last week at the owners meetings, Lynch was asked point blank if that's an option. And he said, yeah, absolutely. Then he was asked if Brandon Ayuk wants to do it. He said, you have to ask him. Do you think it could actually come to this?
Now, I think this is a good question. Could I see it coming to this? Yes. In the sense that, unfortunately for Brandon Ayuk in today's world, the only leverage he has is what he puts on social media. Because Brandon Ayuk is contractually obligated to play out his fifth year with the 49ers. You can't sit out anymore. You're fined. You lose money. You lose a year of service. You're going to just be on that fifth year option a year later. And so he really ultimately doesn't have a choice. Now, do the Niners want that? I don't think so. I think they're going to try and find a middle ground. You see this kind of relationship happen during these extension negotiations, specifically with the Niners. I think that, they're going to get an extension hammered out at some point. But could he play on the fifth-year option? Yes, because the Niners technically have 3 years of team control. You got the fifth-year option, and then you could probably tag him for 2 years before moving on. You get three more years, and arguably that's the current window with this core for a Super Bowl.
And isn't that sort of like the Niners' leverage here? It's like, okay, Brandon, you can say that you're worth whatever you're worth. But let's say he wants $27 million a year on average. Okay, yeah. Well, could give that to you. Or not, make you play for $14 million this year, maybe $21 million next year, and then figure it out after that. So the Niners, if they want to play hardball, can get Brandon Ayuk at a greatly reduced price, and there's nothing he can do about it other than be upset. So maybe that's something he needs to negotiate against.
I think that that's one thing. The other part is, Brandon, do you want money up front? Because that $14 million is his salary. It's not like you get the $14 million at the beginning of the year. You're getting it in game checks week by week, whereas if you get an extension, the biggest part of it is a signing bonus where you might get $20 to $30 million in a check or whatever form, a wire transfer straight
up. That's how I prefer to get my $20 million, just in one payment. That's how I like it.
Yeah.
Just saying. Didn't mean to cut you off. I just got really excited about the idea of a $20 million check. Haven't had one of those in a while.
Just imagine next year. You know, just having that just slide in your bank account. Just like, you know, it's a sweet 20 mil. Just like, it's there.
Oh, and I'm set for life. That was nice.
Appreciate doing business. Time to sit the bench.
I mean, there's actually like no reason not to do this for the 49ers unless you really don't want to make Brandon Ayuk upset. But it's like, it's business. And if he is one willing to budge, then why should the 49ers not do this?
I think that, you know, if you're talking about it in that sense, it's not the fact that they don't want to do it. It's the fact that you understand two things. One, the market for receivers is only increasing. You see contract after contract getting, you know, massive. And the Niners are going to be having to pay probably a good amount of money, more than Deebo Samuel, to Brandon Ayuk. And so to them, it's, Do you question when you're trying to build this roster out, understanding how you've already had to let go of one franchise icon in Ark Armstead for practically nothing? What's the best way to do it? The second portion of it to me is for Ayuk. Ayuk understands that there are still a number of extensions waiting to happen at receiver. Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, T. Higgins, even in his own class. There are a couple of in his own class that are still yet to be extended. Ayuk understands the business of the NFL. The longer you wait, the later you are in the cycle, the more chance you are to get more money. The Niners might want to play ball and try and get something done before those guys. Ayuk himself, understanding he's going to get paid one way or another, might hope to, you know, wait a little bit, maybe go till August, and then get the biggest bag out of the group, understanding that he was able to wait it out and get see what the baseline was for the other deals.
one thing that might be like a difference between Ayuk's situation and Debo's situation was that Debo was a second round pick. So he doesn't make that much money. And his option of like playing on the final year of his rookie contract wasn't appealing at all. Ayuk's different, and I'm sure he wants that extension, but it's like he's made $12 million in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? Like if he probably saved a lot of that. It doesn't look like he spends as much as Debo. And also, if they don't get an extension, he still gets $14 million this year. So he does have a little bit more, I don't know, wiggle room, leverage. I don't know what the word is, but it seems like he can be more.
He has a little more flexibility because that's he's still making money. Yeah. I think that's the case. The one other aspect of it is it's an interesting dynamic, right? Because with the team, Brandon Ayuk, they get the fifth year option. So they have that. With Debo, the desire to get a deal done, you might have had to get it done a little earlier, but you didn't have a fifth year option. He's a free agent after that. And so there's still leverage because you have the, you know, franchise tag and things like that. But Ayuk also could sit more comfortably, understanding he still has $14 million of guaranteed money waiting on him if he chooses to just wait a few months and get you know, $10 million more overall.
Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting if this plays out where the Niners kind of count on Brandon Ayuk giving them a discount so he can get his signing bonus. Working with them. And Ayuk could essentially bet on himself and say, no, I'll take the $14 million and then we'll see what happens after that. But it would be interesting. It's if he's really confident that he's a top five wide receiver in the NFL, play out your fifth year option and then hit the open market or do what Kirk Cousins did in Washington. Just get franchise tag after franchise tag and eventually be the first wide receiver to get the first fully guaranteed contract in like 2-3 years.
Now, I'll be curious to see who gets that one because that is a whole nother discussion. I mean, if we get to that point, I think all hell's going to break loose in the NFL.
Pretty much. Corey wants to know your thoughts on the Seahawks now that Mike McDonald is the head coach.
I don't think too much changes. I mean, he's a very good defensive coordinator, arguably the best in the NFL, at least one of the guys up there the last year. Might change your philosophy a little more, but I don't know if you're thinking about them versus the Niners. I don't think too much changes. They're fielding a similar roster. Perhaps there's a desire to maybe rebuild a little bit, go a little younger. He's a good head coach, going to make it a little difficult for the 49ers on that defensive side. We'll see how he's able to do it. But ultimately, I think it also comes down primarily to the personnel. I don't think much changed.
Yeah. I mean, they still have Geno Smith as their quarterback, is what I want to say about that.
And that's the argument. Don't you always bring that up anytime we play the Seahawks? If Geno's the quarterback, you feel the Niners are going to win?
Of course they are. It's Geno. No offense, but it's Geno. The thing with Mike McDonald, every defense, every team that wants a good defense is looking at what he did last year, those simulated pressures. Can you explain? It's like showing blitz, showing that there are potentially six or seven rushers, but only four come, and you don't know which one they are.
Yeah. I mean,
pretty much. That's what it is. And they like do such a good job of confusing offenses pre-snap. I mean, it seems like the Niners were trying to get some of that. Spagnuolo can do it. They tried to hire Spagnuolo. They hired Brandon Staley, who has some experience with that. So I could see where the Seahawks are coming from. They had one of the more vanilla defenses for the last 10-plus years. But I wonder, like, how much is he going to change other than some schematics on defense?
I think because, like I said, to me, it's truly up to the personnel. The Ravens were able to do so many intriguing things last year, but you had three very high caliber safeties who were able to be versatile, allows you to play, you know, in different packages along the defensive line. They have an elite defensive tackle. You had, you know, pretty solid corners, good edge rushers. You had good personnel that allowed you to blend in all the other things that McDonald did to make that team so good. So to me, it might take a little longer to try and get to that personnel.
All right, let me ask you a question. Niners don't have the best offensive line in the league. Most people would agree it's subpar. Most people would agree the left tackle is great. I don't know that most people would agree on who the weakest link on this offensive line is, though. I had some differing opinions on Twitter, and I was curious. What do you think? What's the weakest link on this offensive line? Weakest link?
I think you view it in two different ways. One, do you think that, you know, if do you involve positional value, or are you just talking about the player? If you involve positional value, you might view Colt McKivitz, you know, in a certain way. To me, though, I think that I think you can honestly point to the entire right side. I think the offensive line is both overrated in some eyes and underrated in some eyes. I think a lot of people say the Niners have like a bottom 10 offensive line. I don't think that's true, but I also don't think that they have an above average starter outside of Trent Williams. I think everybody else is around average, with the right side primarily being average to below average. I'm not a big fan of Jake Brendel. I've said for the past two off seasons, the Niners should probably look to get an upgrade. I think that there have been options the Niners have chosen not to. Don't know if I like the extension as much last year. I think that he has a good argument to potentially being the weakest because of the value in this specific offense. The center is so important in this offense. That's why the Niners got, you know, they paid Weston Richburg $50 million. That's why they paid Alex Mack. They went out and got veterans. Going from that to Jake Brendel, I think, is a significant drop off in terms of not only, you know, the movement and all the things that come with the position, but also the knowledge and the IQ aspect of it, where you're trying to, you know, not only you got good pass blocking technique, but you're also having to help call out protections and do all of that, because Kyle doesn't put too much on the quarterback. He puts a lot on the center. So the way I'll go, I know people might go with McKivitz, might go with John Feliciano, Spencer Burford. I think I'm going to go with Jake Brendel here, given the importance of center in this offense.
I would go with McKivitz just because he gave up 13 sacks last year. I know he's decent as a run blocker, but at right tackle, it seems like when you're that big of a liability in pass protection, it really changes what you can and can't do and what George Kittle is asked to do and all that kind of stuff. But what's interesting is that the Niners extended him, and they extended Brendel. And those and so Brendel, McKivitz, and Trent Williams are under contract for a few more years. Like, that's the core of their offensive line. And Banks isn't extended. Feliciano's on a one-year deal. It really feels like the Niners either don't value their guard, don't like their guards, or don't value the guard position at all. I had people online today saying on Twitter saying that Aaron Banks is the weakest link on the offensive line, and I couldn't believe it. He gave up no sacks last year. He did have turf toe for a while, missed a few games, but
I don't know about that. Like, Banks is, I think maybe people might overproject Banks sometimes, but really a lot of people don't talk about Aaron Banks much. He's the second best player on the offensive line. I don't know if it's close. I don't know if it is, just because the remainder of the group is below average, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like the two sides of the line are built differently for different purposes. I think like the left side of the line is supposed to be bigger and stronger because that's where the point of attack in the run game usually is. You're trying to displace defenders on the left side, push them back. And you have that double team with Banks and Williams. That's powerful. On the right side, that's more of like the outside zone side, the jet sweep side, where you're trying to reach block and use quickness and speed to get to the second level. And I mean, that's the idea. But you end up with this, they used to be good at it. When they had Brunskill and like Young, McGlinchey or Tom Compton, they could really hit big runs to the right side. Now, I can't remember the last time they did.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you can look at it in a couple of ways. It's the Niners, when you talk about some of those guys, they were cheap and they were, what do you call it? They were young. And so that's kind of the difference. I think you brought up a very good point, which is why I want to flip it back to you. You pointed out how the Niners might not value their guards as much. Center, that's a position we've seen them pay. For tackle, they've clearly paid with Trent Williams, obviously. You just extended McKivitz, smaller deal, but you extended him. Do you think that you know, the guard position might just not be as valuable? Because you can go back before Banks, it was Laken Tomlinson who they didn't pay. Obviously, it turns out to be a pretty good deal in hindsight. But your starting right guard for half of the year was a fourth-round pick last year with Spencer Burford. That was a guy who you started week one after drafting him in the fourth round. Banks obviously was a second round pick. Questions right now about whether they'll extend him or not. But what do you think about the whole dynamic?
Well, what's interesting is that this year in free agency, guards got paid a lot of money. All of a sudden, guard was becoming like a premium position. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Niners look at that position that way. I mean, considering the players they've put there. It seems like an afterthought to them, and definitely something they're not trying to spend on. While the Rams just spent $16 million a year on a free agent, Jonah Jackson. That's something like that.
Yeah. And Kevin Dotson, 16 or 17 or something for both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just guard in general. It seems like if you look at it, Feliciano and Banks, both free agents after this year, they might be drafting guards in this. I mean, they could draft a guard in round two like they did 4 years ago.
Right.
Redshirting.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see it because I'll be honest, I don't expect Aaron Banks back on this team next year. And it's not because of his talent, but it is because I think the Niners were ahead of the curve and, you know, looking at the guard market, seeing how it's skyrocketed. I don't think they want to pay $16 million for a guard or $13 million when it was Laken Tomlinson for a guard. I don't think that that's in their MO. I think we can question the philosophy for sure. But yeah, it just doesn't seem like they valued that position as much overall compared to the other spots on the offensive line.
Yeah, I did a show with Marco yesterday. We were both advocating that the Niners should extend Aaron Banks now before his price tag goes up. Then I wrote an article this morning for SI.com on the same subject. And, you know, you always get the most pushback on Twitter. Anytime you put something on Twitter is wrong. So I wish it's nice. It's good to learn what was wrong. And when I put that one up, a lot of people said, first of all, Banks is going to be really expensive just because the guard market's crazy. And that was an interesting point. I hadn't really thought of it. I thought Aaron Banks, there's a modest left guard that they could extend for a modest price and keep him around for a while since they like continuity so much. But really looking at the guard market, he might get a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because if you look at it, there were players, right, this offseason at guard who people didn't view as high. Robert Hunt, above average guard. Do I consider him in the elite range? No. But because he's young, because he's got good, you know, because you have good team control, and because he's a good fit for a certain system, he ends up going out and getting $20 million per year. And, you know, you don't necessarily expect that type of money consistently, but $20 million per year for Robert Hunt is pretty, pretty darn good. And I mean, overall, the top guards all got over $15 million a year this year. That might be the money. If you're talking about Aaron Banks, who's going to be young next year, that might be the money that Aaron Banks is accustomed to having because he doesn't have a fifth year option. He's going to go into free agency 1 year earlier, being a second round pick. And it seems like he's in a good position to get paid.
So knowing how the Niners do business on the offensive line, if there's a high chance he's not coming back in 2025, seems like there's a high chance the Niners are going to draft a guard on day two, sit him for a year and have him start in 2025. Or they could just sign someone, but they don't seem to be wanting to sign guards other than John Feliciano. Excuse me. Unless your name is John Feliciano, they won't sign you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's a good point where you might have to look for a guard in this draft. It might be among the higher of priorities. And I think the Niners are going into this one. It helps you that this is a strong tackle class, might push some of the guards or some of the interior guys down. And the interior class in this one is really strong in that second, third, fourth round, where the Niners could very well target a guard or a guard target, you know, a player who could transition to guard. And so I could very well see that because, like I said, I don't envision the Niners extending Aaron Banks. I think that they're going to view, you don't trade him either, just given you're going all in and you view that comp three probably as pretty valuable next year, but I don't see him extending him. And I think that the Niners are going to ultimately have to find a different way to fill that void. And that's where you point to the last two draft classes, because ultimately you might want that guy to already be on the roster where you're kind of just, he's a guy in waiting to get a starting job. But the Niners have really struggled in the last two drafts, and that has kind of helped or hurt them in the sense that they might need some of these rookies to really start improving and really start playing a big role in year one or year two starting this year.
Yeah, it's a little scary to let Banks go and just count on replacing him with a offensive lineman you drafted because, I mean, the Niners' redshirt program hasn't been too fruitful the last few years.
Great,
I mean,
right? It's not been
linebackers, yeah. Drake Jackson, Spencer Burford. I mean, it just hasn't been working that well. But it did work with Aaron Banks.
So yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And I mean, there was the argument that Banks could also started year one had he not gotten injured in camp. Like I think he got injured early in like the summer or something. But regardless, the Niners might be in a position where Kyle Shanahan's hand is going to be forced because, like the other teams. The Niners are going to be in a position where they just have to play rookies because they don't have another choice because of how much or how many players might be getting better deals elsewhere when they enter free agency. You're just going to have to play the rookies. Guard might be a position where that might come to fruition as early as next year.
Hmm. Yeah. It's interesting with this Niners team. It seems like they're in a position where they have a really good veteran roster. And they've filled most of their holes in free agency. So in the draft, they could be looking for needs next year. Guard, corner, maybe safety, wide receiver if they're planning on trading, or if they're planning on letting Juwan Jennings go. They seem to be in the market for slot receivers. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Tyler Boyd thing that we saw a couple of days ago, that was kind of intriguing.
What about Jerry Rice's kid? Is he a slot receiver?
No. I mean, you can play him in the slot. Now, I'm not high on Jerry Rice's kid, Brandon Rice, but I think you can play in the slot, obviously, the hometown vibe. And he has a Juwan Jennings type of build. He's a little bigger. So, if you consider you want a guy who can replace Jennings exactly like him, maybe you want a guy like Brandon Rice.
How much you want to bet they take Brandon Rice's Jerry Rice's kid? Speaking of bets, shout out to our sponsor, BetUS, the number one online sports book. They're currently offering 125% deposit match up to $2,500 on your first three deposits. That means if you put in $500, you'll have $1,250 to play with. That's a lot of money. BetUS also has 24/7 customer service and 24-hour payouts. That's convenient. Click the top link in the description of the video to receive your bonus. Also, giving away $125 in just free play. So the first five people who DM me on Twitter, their account, showing me their account number on Twitter, will receive $25 for free on BetUS. Let's check it out and see what's going on with their specials. What we got? Christmas Day. Oh, most valuable player. Let's see the odds.
You think Brock's up there?
Huh?
Brock, where is he?
That's what kills me. He's like, Mahomes is up there. You know he's not going to win the award. They're never going to give it to him again, but Aaron Rodgers could get it. Purdy could get it.
McCaffrey's all the way down there.
McCaffrey's way down.
But he's up there.
I like going to BetUS and making bets on long odds. It's for fun. Kirk Cousins is down there. He could do it.
That would be,
I don't know. What do you think is the most responsible bet here for regular season MVP? I mean, Josh Allen trying to do it, but they just lost
Stephon Diggs. Is Jimmy Garoppolo here?
What about Stroud?
Stroud, I mean, I think Stroud would be a pretty nice one, especially now that they got Diggs. I mean, that team looks real, real good right now, at least for this year. They look good. And I mean, Stroud was already all the way up there. You know, he was like a top five quarterback the second half of the year. So I would not mind Stroud at all.
Stroud, you don't know where Dak Prescott's going to be. Brock Purdy's also not a bad bet at plus 1,400.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers plus 1,800, although that's counting on him to stay healthy. What do you think of Rodgers at this point in his career?
I think he's a good quarterback. It's just, like you said, about staying healthy. I mean, that whole team, it seems like, is all like, you know, they're working on one leg. You got Mike Williams. You got Tyron Smith. You got Aaron Rodgers. I mean, those three.
If he stays healthy and they win, he's getting all the credit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be like, you know, one of those redemption stories.
I'm putting my money on Rodgers.
There we go.
Why not? Rodgers, I just talked myself into it. $10 to win 180. Let's place the bet. Boom. There it is. Confirm.
Payout, yeah.
Confirm. That's a nice payout. Real quick.
BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus, 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
Shout out to the sponsor. Okay. This is an interesting phenomenon. Been checking out the mock draft season. When you go on NFL.com, they have some of the most respected draft gurus in the game. Daniel Jeremiah, Lance Zierlein, both of them in their latest mock draft have the Niners taking defensive linemen.
I mean, I've done a few mock drafts overall, but if you're talking about this position, I want to ask you, I want to flip the question actually to you, because you talk about the defensive line. And so I want to kind of hear your thoughts. Obviously, Armstead no longer there. What do you kind of think about the position overall right now before the draft?
I mean, I like the additions they've made. I like Leonard Floyd. I like Gross Matos. I like the two defensive tackles. You're not overpaying for anyone like you did with Javon Hargrave and Eric Armstead. Daniel Jeremiah, I believe, is the one that has the Niners taking Chop Robinson at 31.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't see it. Like, he's a rotational pass rusher. That's why they drafted Robert Beal Jr. in the fifth round last year. How many rotational pass rushers who aren't three down players are you going to take, especially in round one? It just seems like they have needs for like three down players who could be full blown starters as, I mean, maybe not this year, but next year at a bunch of positions. So I don't really see it. I feel like they address this in free agency, and to make it the top priority in the draft as well would be overkill, but also something the Niners would definitely do at D-line. So I can't rule it out.
I think that when you look at defensive line, I think this draft might give you an indication of how they view their team for 2025. Because they brought in two defensive tackles, specifically looking at defensive tackle. They brought in Malik Collins via trade, my favorite move of the offseason, and then they brought in Jordan Elliott. Collins, though, is essentially on a one-year deal. His salary for next year, $10 million, not guaranteed at all. So they could cut him, and they wouldn't have to pay a dime. Jordan Elliott, I believe his cap hit next year, it's not high at all in terms of the dead cap when you look at things like that. And so I'm pretty sure Jordan Elliott, if you look at him in 2025, you could probably save around 50% of his money if you ended up cutting him. So the point being, they're 1 to 2 year deals. They could have both players for 2 years if they produce well, but they could also be 1 year deals if you want to create cap space next year or move on. And so if the Niners address D-line early, might give you more of an indication that they view those guys, whoever they're drafting, as the future rather than maybe carrying the same guys over for next year. But I also don't think it's as big of a priority as some people are saying. I think the Niners have now built themselves a solid core where, to me, I'm questioning, how are you going to get these guys playing time? Because we talked about the four additions. You already have Javon Hargrave on top of the two D tackles that you brought in. Hargrave's here this year, could be also here next year with his contract. You have Nick Bosa. You have good players along your defensive line. It's not like you don't have options throughout the, you know, Leonard Floyd being one of them as well.
I like Floyd a lot.
Yeah, I think he's reliable. So where is the playing time to me going to come out of if you're going to spend a first round pick in arguably your most crucial draft in determining your Super Bowl window? Where's the playing time coming out of? That's the question for me.
And I kind of like that the Niners address the defensive line in free agency because you can get really good players for relatively cheap. Like Leonard Floyd's a former first round pick who's right in the prime of his career, and the rest of the league was like, I don't know. It's leftovers. But in the draft, they're all pushed up to the front of the draft. I liked it. I think the Niners should be looking at other positions in the draft, whether it's secondary or offensive line or literally anything else. I'm good with it. But if they go back to D tackle, it's like, you're redshirting your first round pick. Why? Why?
Yeah.
You did that with Trey Lance. It didn't work.
Especially when you look at the options, I think we'll get to 31 specifically in a bit. But if you look at the options, it just feels that if you look at the defensive line depth, there are good options in the second round. There are good options in the late third, fourth round where you could potentially find, you know, the guys that you want, those rotational pieces that are good at a specific thing with potential to grow into a three down player. You could find those guys later in the draft. Now, I know if you're talking about a high end defensive tackle, those are usually drafted within the first two rounds. But the Niners don't need that. They don't. It's just not the way that they usually operate. And I think that you're going to be able to find gems or, you know, talent that you believe translates well to your system later in the draft while also addressing other positions who might be better players at that specific draft spot.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. Like, just pragmatically, let's say the Niners take a defensive tackle in round and they like him. So who doesn't? Malik Collins is coming off the bench. Jordan Elliott doesn't have a role.
It's just wasted money, in my opinion, that point, because Collins' contract is fully guaranteed, I believe. His $8.5 million is guaranteed. You just paid Jordan Elliott 2 years, $10 million. Is he going to be your fifth guy? Is he going to be the fifth guy or fourth guy in the rotation? And then apart from that, you already said, I mean, you like Kalea Davis. You like some of the other guys where you've given them a one-year deal or roster spots or whatever it might be. What happens to them then if you just continue to push down the depth chart while not addressing a different position?
Yeah, and like with taking a guy like an edge rusher, Chop Robinson, well, what happens to Yetur Gross-Matos? Why did you sign him?
And the other question is, you drafted it. I'm not going to compare the two necessarily, but you drafted a situational edge rusher a couple of years ago that you thought could develop in Drake Jackson with your second round pick.
And then you drafted Robert Beal last year, a situational edge rusher.
So are you going to allow the players to develop by playing over more seasoned veterans, or are you going to look to redshirt them and then potentially have them play next year? What's kind of the situation? Because you would hope that your first round pick could find a way on the field this year.
Agree. Thank you, Jim Rizzo, for $2.79 exactly. That was very generous. I appreciate it very much. All right. Give me BPA at 31. Who do you think will be the best player available? Obviously, we don't know.
Yeah.
Who's going to be there? But the Niners probably are thinking along the lines, who's going to be the best player on the board when they pick?
It might be funny because I don't think I've ever said this in a draft for a position this late. I genuinely believe offensive line might be best player available at 31. Mm. Offensive line is a position that usually gets overdrafted just because of the importance specifically for tackles, the importance of that position. It gets overdrafted, but offensive tackle might be best player available at 31 because I believe that there are up to 11 offensive linemen, 9 offensive tackles that could be in first round consideration. You're talking about guys at the end of 31. You've seen them being mocked to the Niners at times. Jordan Morgan from Arizona, the Niners have had interest. Guy the Niners definitely have had interest in, BYU tackle Kingsley Suyamata, who seems, if you look at him, that guy is a tackle. That guy is very clearly a tackle. And so if talking about what the Niners might go for, I think offensive tackle is a very good spot. And some of those guys could also transition into guard. So if you feel you want to have a competition, you have a competition on the outside, you have a competition on the inside. And I think that there's a path to potentially playing at some point in year one. Might not be the week one starter, but I think as they develop, as they get more NFL refined, you find a way for them to play in week one, in year one, with the potential of also moving that guy over to the left side when Trent Williams ultimately retires.
It's going to be interesting to see what the Niners do at right tackle, like who they go for. I got to think they're going to draft someone. They signed Brandon Parker, who, I mean, it's like, is he going to make the team? Probably, maybe not. So could they take a right tackle at 31 if he's the best player available? Yeah. I just been looking at, I feel like the Niners, every team has profiles for positions, what they're looking for in terms of athletic traits. And they don't really broadcast them, but you can figure them out if you look at the players they've drafted or added at that position. And I can't help but notice some patterns with the right tackles the Niners have acquired. They're all light. None of them are really more than 310 pounds. McGlinchey, McKivitz, they're all like between 300 and 310. And they're all like 6 feet six or taller, maybe a shade below 6'6". But that body type is very tight endy. 6'7", 300 pounds, it's like, that's lean.
Yeah.
But that's what they're looking for.
I mean, the guy that I pointed out, I believe Jordan Morgan, he's 6'5", 310 pounds.
There you go.
And he is an extremely good athlete. So
there you go.
That could be another guy. But if you go offensive line, I think that the options would, there would be an option there or an option that you would want to trade up for. The Niners have a prime window, I think, to potentially address that position in the first round.
What's interesting about this spot, the end of round one, is it possible that the best player available will be a quarterback and they'll be able to trade down?
I don't think so, but I could very well see the, I don't know if it'll be best player available, but the one argument that you could make for that, what do teams want for a quarterback? Yes, but they also want the fifth round.
But he might be the one, you know what I'm saying? Yeah,
exactly. And at the end of the first round, 31, 32, a lot of teams start calling. We want that fifth year option. Can we trade up? We'll give you a premium for a trade because we want the fifth year option. If the Niners like where they are with a lot of players on their board, you go back 6-7 spots, somebody comes up to maybe take Michael Penix or Bo Nix or whoever it might be, you could get some value out of that.
Yeah, and the Niners really have a terrible track record of drafting in round one. They've only given one extension. IU could be two, but he hasn't gotten it yet. And he might play out his fifth-year option and bounce. We have no idea what's happening with Brandon Ayuk, so maybe the Niners say, you know what, let's just trade down four spots and get the hell out of round one. Might do it.
They could. I mean, you'd get good value for it, probably.
Probably would, depending on if Bo Nix or Penix, and that name is dangerous. Which quarterback do you like better? Do you have an opinion?
I think it honestly depends on the team. Penix is he's got red flags all over him with the injuries and stuff.
Injuries.
I think his arm is a good amount better.
He run a 4.4.
He did 4.46, and it looked like he was jogging. So he's fast. But you also worry when he's running like that, is he going to get injured again? True. I don't really know. So, yeah, it's dicey.
I feel like one thing I'd like to do when scouting left-handed quarterbacks is just watch them in like a mirrored lens. So they just kind of see
what they look like.
They're right-handed. And yeah, sometimes I feel like you might write them off. Like, that looks weird. I'll just watch them right-handed. You might like them better.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I know
exactly. I remember one time I watched Trey Lance throw left-handed just because that was not really, but like, you know, and it looked better. He looked like Steve Young.
Maybe that's what they should have done, you know?
Just turn just
had a mirror on the highlights, you know?
All right, so the Bills were sort of the team of the week. They traded away Stephon Diggs. People were like, what? How can you do that? You're on the cusp of winning a Super Bowl. They're like, yeah, but we're not going to win it.
Yeah.
We're not. We tried. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. We're going to try something else. That brings us to the 49ers. They haven't really gotten there yet mentally. They've been holding on to the good times for a while. Are they going to become the Bills soon?
I don't know necessarily in that sense, but I think that the one thing I want to bring up, a very, very prevalent thing in today's NFL, is the idea of paying a star-level quarterback or paying a quarterback star-level money.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen, he got paid above $50 million, it seemed like, or whatever that contract was. And the team is now facing the ramifications of having to dish out such a big quarterback to or contract to a quarterback, because not only did they lose Stephon Diggs, they lost several pieces that they were just having to let go this offseason. Tre'Davious White, one of their cornerbacks who had been dealing with injuries post one cut, you lose both of your starting safeties. They were losing pieces all over the board, and this is a thing to retool. But the thing I want to point out with the Bills and the Niners, the Bills are following a trend that several top teams have now followed once they paid a quarterback, which is trading away their top receiver.
Thank you. Thank you. Ron's smart. I was waiting to go there too. It seems like what the Chiefs have just shown is you don't need a number one wide receiver. They've just won back-to-back Super Bowls, and their number one wide receiver was Juju Smith-Schuster 1 year and Rashee Rice the next year.
And the thing is, I think the true test now in the NFL is for a star for a quarterback to be a star is, can you elevate maybe average level receivers to win a Super Bowl? Because the Chiefs, what do they do once they paid Mahomes? They had to trade away Tyreek Hill. You're talking about the Bills just trading away Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. Just earlier this offseason, the Chargers traded away Keenan Allen once they had to pay Justin Herbert. This is a trend that you're starting to slowly see. And these are guys who you're not maybe paying on your first contract or the second contract. It's the third contract guys where, you know, they're at the end of that second contract. You're getting a significant amount of money. You might have to move off of them. And so to me with the Niners. Brings us to
Brandon Ayuk.
Yes, because Brock Purdy is going to potentially get a contract soon. And maybe we're a few years away from the discussion for the Niners. But you do wonder, where do you get to the point for the Niners? Because it seems inevitable that Deebo Samuel might be gone within the next 2 years with his contract and with the way the Niners are approaching Ayuk. And so it seems like, when are we going to get to the stage of how tough it might be for the Niners once they pay Brock Purdy to supplant him with significant amount of talent?
Well, I think it'll depend on how well they draft. Mm-hmm. Because like the Chiefs have sort of figured out, and I agree with them, that once you're spending $500 million on your quarterback, there are two other positions on the offense that you're investing in: offensive line and tight end.
Yeah.
Those are the two, because your tight end is really tough to stop in the passing game, in the playoffs, and he's cheaper than wide receivers for whatever reason. But you don't see teams like the Chiefs spending on wide receivers or running backs. You don't. And I wonder if Kyle's ever going to get there.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you do wonder, you know, whether you're going to get there or not. And so I think that that's going to be a tough thing for the Niners, because I think every kind of team where you've seen, I think I can even pull out more examples where you see those big contracts for quarterbacks, you're facing a decision. And maybe Kyle will try and pivot to a different way. Maybe you just don't pay a single offensive lineman because you value those skill position players so much. But Green Bay, on example, once they paid Rodgers, who did you trade away? Davante Adams. He goes over to Vegas. Had
like a wide receiver, a top five a paid wide receiver and a top five paid quarterback on the same team. And did they do anything? It doesn't seem like a successful model.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
that's where the Niners are sort of going to be in a couple of years. If they're, that's where they're going to be in a couple of years.
And that's why, to me, I want to ask your opinion on it. I think that's why these next few years are going to be so crucial for the Niners. Because to me, this is your Super Bowl window, especially with, because you don't know. You gotta answer the question yourselves. Is Brock Purdy going to be that type of quarterback, a top five quarterback for the money? Because he's going to get top five money, if not from the Niners, from some team. That's the type of way quarterbacks are going to
be the highest paid player in the NFL when he gets his extension. Who knows?
He might. And so the Niners have a window where you've got to focus right now. So what do you kind of take away from that window and how the Niners might approach the next few seasons, knowing that you're probably going to have to retool the roster once you pay a quarterback?
Yeah, well, it seems like what they've been trying to do is just keep their group together. Yeah. They'll keep Brandon Ayuk here somehow, some way. It may not be on an extension, but could be 1 year at a time. I don't think they're going to change too much, though, man. It seems like that's what they've been telling us since 2019. Like, hey, we got the formula. We figured it out. Okay, but here's the thing, though. I'll grant them. I think this is an interesting little logic equation that they've put together. Maybe that's not what it is. But they're saying, like, they have the right team. It's basically built. They don't have to tweak anything with the formulas. Keep players in the same roles. Okay, fine. Maybe you're right. So why haven't you won the Super Bowl? If the team is as is good enough to win the Super Bowl, then the coach isn't, right? Right? It's Kyle's fault, right? Or if Kyle is good enough to win the Super Bowl, there's something wrong with the roster. It's got to be one or the other. You can't keep the same coach and the same roster structure for 5 years and just cross your fingers. It's got to be one or the other.
No, and I agree. And I think, to me, I caught a lot of flack for it because I said at the beginning of the year and then throughout the season, I ultimately don't think the Niners are going to win the Super Bowl. They could very well make it last year, and they clearly didn't. And the problem with that is, I thought last year was the best shot you had. Because when you're looking at the opponents, the Chiefs were, this is a retool year this past year for the Chiefs. Yeah. They were in a pure retool year. Rashee Rice, a rookie in the second round, was their leading receiver this past year. The overall team was going under a reset, and now you're going to supplant that talent they already have with a first round pick and a whole new draft class. And so this is where I thought that if you're looking at other teams, this was the year because other teams are only going to start getting better, at least if you're talking about contenders. Teams like the Lions in the NFC. The Chiefs, obviously, in the AFC are the team to beat. It seems like they're just in a way where they might just get better.
Houston's making strides. Green Bay's making strides. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got because now you got the young and up-and-coming quarterback on the rookie deals where you can kind of supplant that roster around
them. They haven't wasted any time.
And that's the way you got to do it.
Yeah. So hold on. You said something a minute ago. You said you knew or you felt the Niners weren't going to win the Super Bowl last year. Why? Mm-hmm. Why?
I personally thought there were a lot of reasons. One, when it comes to the quarterback, can you ultimately get top five quarterback play from Brock Purdy? That, at least at the beginning of the year, was a question mark. Coming off an injury and things like that. Brock exceeded my expectations last year, but still, can you get top five quarterback play throughout the entire year, and especially when it matters? But two, when you look at the way the team was built, and especially when the way the team kind of went through this, through the back end of the season, the biggest question to me and the number one takeaway I had in every piece that I wrote going into the Super Bowl, how fast can you start? My number one takeaway heading into the Super Bowl was if the Niners were going to start fast, they were going to win. And I know you've probably watched that game a couple of times, and you've probably said it yourself. The Niners should have been up more than 10 points going into, it should have been a lot more than 10-0. You had the opportunities, but when you don't start fast, you allow a team like the Chiefs to come back. And personally, I don't know how, I know we saw it a couple of times in the playoffs. I don't know how much the Niners are built to win from behind against Patrick Mahomes, because generally teams don't, that you don't beat Patrick Mahomes when you're trailing. And so you had to have enough of a window against a depleted Chiefs roster where you don't have that many, that strong of a team to ultimately win. The Niners didn't do that. They ultimately lose. And now that's why this year, I think the Niners have a good shot because you have a strong roster. Your quarterback is, your quarterback is solidified as a top 12, 15 quarterback in the NFL. The question though is, how are you going to perform against teams that now have gotten better?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I want to ask you, though. Talk about the Niners formula. What do you think kind of needs to change in order for them to reach the goal?
New coach.
Do you think that ultimately would be the main priority?
I think that's the problem. And I know you can't say that around Niner fans, or really in the NFL, because everyone thinks you don't know ball if you think Kyle Shanahan isn't going to win a Super Bowl. But I think it's his fault. I think he has a lot of things going. He's a top three offensive coach in the league. Everyone wants his system. He does so many things really well. The way he uses motion and shifts really gets defenses on their heels, and he dictates. But then when it's like the very end of the season in the most pressurized moment, he gets away from that stuff. He gets uncharacteristic in what he does on offense, and he gets conservative. He doesn't have guts. Like, I just think I'm not saying he's a bad head coach. I don't think he's ever going to win a Super Bowl.
So even if he gets fired, it goes on to his next spot. You ultimately don't think that might be the case.
No, because that all assumes that he's going to like do self-reflection and change. He hasn't changed. He's not going to change. He doesn't do self-reflection. It's not his fault. Nothing's his fault. It's not his fault, Rohan. Just ask him. So look, he gets credit for building the team, getting it this far. I don't think he's going to take it to the promised land, get it across the finish line, whatever metaphor you want to use. I think he had the best team he's ever going to have last year.
I agree. With that part, I mean, you know, you and I will obviously differ a bit on the Shanahan part, because sure. I truly do believe when it comes to it, I think he will ultimately win a Super Bowl because of the things not only he brings around, but the things his players bring around.
Sure, and neither of us know. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly. But I do
feel like he missed his best shot last year. And it's like, man, I think other coaches could have won with that roster. That roster was freaking loaded.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not only that, but the way that you got there, it seemed like that last year was the year. That's why a lot of people. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you just had the guy, Ernie Adams, who was like the analytics guru for the Patriots forever, came out and said something like, you know, well, I would have taken the ball second, because at least then you know exactly. You know it's four downs every time, and it affects how you call plays on first and second and third down. I don't know if that's necessarily why the Niners lost, but it's just interesting to have so many people come out and be like, by the way, I disagree with Kyle. No one asked me, but I absolutely disagree with Kyle.
Yeah, yeah. And no, I mean, yeah, that one will be always, I think that one's just always going to be etched into Niner fans' minds, because it was the first time we've really seen these rules applied on that big of a stage. That one's always going to be something to talk about for sure.
You know, it'd be interesting if the Niners, if these Niners, Kyle never wins a Super Bowl with the Niners and leaves. If they did a 30 for 30 on this era, why didn't Kyle's Niners win the Super Bowl? I mean, they came as close as a group could come twice. They were winning in overtime and lost.
Yeah,
exactly. That would be a good 30 for 30, like really behind the scenes. But anyway, maybe they'll win it one day. Maybe. Well, look, everyone, if you look in the description, if you look in the chat box, I'm still giving away this Brandon Ayuk signed jersey. And if you don't believe it, here it is. It's signed. Brandon Ayuk. It's authentic. And I'm giving it away. So all you got to do is make a deposit on the Sleeper app. Use promo code CONE.
That's a good deal. On the team. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to get it before he gets off the team, or if he gets off the team, you got to get it now.
I opened up the bag just to show you that it's real. So there you go. Rohan, thank you very much.
Hey, you know, you got to just make sure it's authentic. That's just the way
you got to go. Super authentic. I'm going to start wearing around town.
So now we know how to see you. You know, if you're in Oakland, if you're posted up in Oakland, you see a guy just wearing a
signed Brandon Ayuk jersey. That's probably great.
Signed Brandon Ayuk jersey. Yeah. There you go.
All right, man. Go to a frat party or something.
I'm too busy chopping it up with the Grant Cohn here.
Chopping it up. I love it up. You're like, it's like six. It's like 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Eastern on a Friday, and I was like, hey, man, you want to stream? You're like, absolutely. Man, if I was in college and someone hit me up, if Matt Maiocco hit me up to stream on a Friday night, I'd been like, yeah.
I'll see you later.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, Ron.
No, as always, man, it's a great time. I obviously appreciate any time we can go on for an hour. I have a fun one. Fun one today, though.
It's great. Okay. Yeah, we'll do it again soon, man. Go have fun. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Cone phone.